Welcome to the Fed Life Podcast with Dan Seip from Serving Those Who Serve. In this podcast, Dan draws from years of financial experience to help federal employees overcome challenges that every Fed can relate to. Join us for this journey as we reach, teach, and serve to help you make the right financial decisions. Now, on to the show.
And hello and welcome to this episode of the Fed Life Podcast. Once again, I am your host, Dan Seip. Additionally, I'm the branch manager here at Serving Those Who Serve and Lee Seip & Associates. I will begin, as I always do. I want to thank you for taking the time to listen, and above all, thank you for your service. You do not hear that enough. We are back again today with the professor, the incomparable, the guru, Ed Zirndorfer, as part of our ongoing mission to reach, teach, and serve you. Now, at the outset, I have to say that the opinions of Ed Zirndorfer are not necessarily those of Raymond James or Serving Those Who Serve. And this podcast is intended for informational purposes only and not intended to be taken as advice. All listeners should consult their personal advisors before taking any action. So, okay, Ed, we are back. And today we're talking about the Federal Employee Health Benefit Program, or FEHB, especially in light of the upcoming open season. So you ready to jump in?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me again.
Always great to have you, brother. You know that. As is our practice, we like to keep the information coming to you, the listener, in usable, easy-to-listen bites. So we'll break this into part one and part two. In part one, Ed will talk about the program in general, types of plans, some of the tax considerations. And then in part two, we'll dive into the dental and vision. And Ed has some interesting thoughts on that. And we may even dive into a couple of the add-ons like the healthcare spending accounts and flexible spending accounts. And remember, if you hear something that you're not in a position to write it down, don't worry. We've got you covered with the Fed Zone articles that Ed writes. You can find those at blog.stwserve.com. So as I always like to do, because I'm kind of a nerd for this stuff, let's begin with a little history. FEHB got started in 1960. And I can tell you there are literally hundreds of plans available nationwide. In my home state of Maryland alone, I counted 27. And possibly the most amazing part of this is Uncle Sam contributes to the cost of this on average up to 72% for eligible feds. So Ed, that's a pretty nice plan, right?
A tremendously great plan. I don't know too many employers in this country that pay that much of the premium cost, but the real cake, I call it, not the icing, is the fact that federal employees can carry this health insurance benefit into retirement if they meet certain qualifications. This is a tremendous benefit for a Fed's retirement.
Couldn't agree with you more. And whenever that topic comes up, I have to put out my own personal ad here. If there's any agency anywhere in federal service that wants to pick up an old guy with a whole lot of financial knowledge, I will work wage scale for 5 years just to be able to get a hold of the health plan if you'll let me do that.
That's interesting you say that, Dan, because I've known of cases where people work in private industry their entire lives. They start working in private industry in their 20s, 30s, 40s. They work until their late 50s with health benefits. They retire and their employer says, we're not going to give you health insurance for retirement. Sure. They're not obligated to. No law says they have to. So what does this the retired employee do? They come to work with the federal government for a minimum 5 years.
5 years.
With health insurance coverage. It doesn't have to be a high-paying federal job. It could be a GS-1 counting widgets for 5 years with health benefits.
Send
then
me
retire.
The widgets.
And the government will pay throughout the individual's retirement for the individual and for if the individual is married for the individual's spouse, 72 to 75% of the premium costs. That is a tremendous benefit.
Folks, it's a great perk. You do a lot for us. You deserve it. Okay, so with open season upon us, as it is every year, Ed, let's begin with the dates so folks know when and where they are.
Okay, this year's open season, Dan, starts on Monday, November 11th and runs to Monday, December 9th. It always goes from the second Monday of December to the second Monday of December of every year.
Okay, so let's say I'm a Fed. During that time, what can I do?
All right, during the open season, there are a few things that a federal employee can do, as well as an annuitant, I should say, during the open season. One, they can change their federal employee's health insurance coverage. You can change plans. They can change the type of coverage they have. adding eligible family members mm-hmm. or dropping certain family members if they have to. They also, during this open season, can change their dental or enroll in the dental, mm-hmm. change their vision or enroll in the vision insurance plan or disenroll from the dental and vision insurance plans they were in. Employees mm-hmm. can enroll or re-enroll. They have to if they're in the healthcare flexible spending accounts
gotcha.
Because with the healthcare flexible spending accounts, it does not, the benefit does not carry over from year to year. The reason I say that is because if a federal employee has health insurance or dental vision insurance and they choose not to change their plans, the coverage will carry over to the next plan year automatically unless they formally change the plan or disenroll. Mm-hmm. That is not the case with the healthcare flexible spending accounts. That's not true when it comes to the dependent care FSA. A employee has to enroll or re-enroll in the healthcare and the dependent care FSA from one year to the next.
Okay. So safe bet we'll be doing this podcast again next year, reminding people, right?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Okay. So, you know, I mentioned at the beginning there are a lot of plans available. So for starters, why don't we begin with the basics? A Fed can cover themselves or the family, correct?
Yes, a federal employee can cover themselves. That's called self-only coverage when mm-hmm. it comes to health insurance. A federal employee as well as an annuitant can cover one other eligible family member. Who is an eligible family member? It could be a spouse mm-hmm. or it could be a child who is under the age of 26, mm-hmm. not 22, 26. Let's say that child is married and maybe they're working. Makes no difference. As long as they're under the age of 26, that mm-hmm. child is eligible to stay on the federal employee's health insurance or federal annuitant's health insurance as part of self plus one. And then there's self and family coverage. Self and family means the employee or annuitant and multiple family members, a spouse mm-hmm. and unlimited number of children. Could be one child, could be two children, could be 10 children mm-hmm. who are under the age of 26. I also want to point out that if a federal employee has a, or annuitant has a child who was disabled mm-hmm. before the age of 22, that child is eligible to stay on the federal employee's health insurance even past age 26.
And feds, I can attest to that. Some of you who come to seminars or listen to previous podcasts, you know my story. My father-in-law's middle daughter is special needs. My wife is now her guardian, and she still receives federal employee health insurance. There were a couple hiccups here and there. Maybe we'll have kind of a blooper reel conversation, Ed and I, in a future podcast where we talk about some of the things that just happen when people aren't expecting a claim of one type or another. So, you know, someone being put through at the age of 50 still is a dependent. That sometimes will look a little strange to the folks up in Boyers, Pennsylvania. So sometimes there's a hiccup there, but I can tell you it's been there for her and it's been a great benefit. So, Ed, the Self Plus One, that actually came in only a couple of years ago, correct?
Yes, that's right, Dan. It started back in 2016. Many federal employees were asking that. The reason I'm saying that, because the dental and vision insurance was a separate type of insurance, always had Self Plus One. But the federal employees' health insurance only had at one time self only for most of the years until 2016. Self only and self and family. The problem is that with self and family, you're talking about multiple family members.
Sure.
It could be two. It could be an employee, annuitant, and a spouse, or it could be an employee, spouse, and one child, two children, 15 children. Mm-hmm. And somebody who has just one person on the plan as part of self and family, like a spouse, is paying the same premium for the same plan as somebody who has multiple family members. Mm-hmm. So the question came up, why doesn't the federal employees' health insurance offer self plus one? So OPM finally agreed to offer self plus one coverage. And I got to admit, Dan, there's been a lot of disappointment with the self plus one.
Really?
Because you would think if you're talking about a health insurance plan that's covering two people, self plus one, mm-hmm. the premium should be much cheaper compared to self and family. And uh-huh. that has not been the case. There is some savings, but not much. And the way OPM explains it, and I see where they're coming from, when it comes to self plus one, who would be the most logical employee or annuitant who would sign up for self plus one? A retiree.
Sure.
Somebody who's past, let's say, 65.
Right.
And they have themselves on a plan. They have a spouse. The children are no longer at their past age 26.
Gotcha.
As opposed to a young couple, let's say, with the employee and spouse. Mm-hmm. Who is incurring most of the big medical expenses? It's the retirees.
Well, as a 60-something myself, so, I can tell you. It's somebody like me.
Right. So OPM did some the insurance companies did some studies. So most of their big costs are for the retirees. So there is maybe $10 to $15 in some cases difference between self plus one is cheaper compared to self and family. I personally have self plus one. Mm-hmm. And I'm saving probably about $15 a month compared to if I had self and family.
Okay.
But
so it's something.
It's still money in the bank.
Right. Okay. And if somebody out there is listening and they're presently on a family and thinking, hey, self plus one might be better for me right now, how would they go about enrolling in that for this open season?
During the open season, mm-hmm. they would check with their benefit, their personnel office, human resources office. But I believe there's a form. It's standard form SF-2809, SF-2809, where they would elect self plus one coverage. Now, I also want to say this, that if a couple right now has self and family, because they have, let's say, the employee and a spouse, and they do have, let's say, one child. Mm-hmm. And that one child on the plan is turning 26 sometime during 2020. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's say in March.
Sure.
That's outside the open season.
Gotcha.
Can they change from self and family to self plus one outside the open season? And the answer is yes, because this is a life event.
Qualifying event.
It's a qualifying event, mm-hmm. that would allow them to change from self and family to self plus one in the middle of the year. They don't have to wait for the next open season.
Gotcha. So it's kind of the inverse of having a baby.
Yeah, exactly.
You know where that goes.
Along those lines, let's suppose that a person has self plus one, mm-hmm. but they're expecting a child during the year. Mm-hmm. Child's not born yet.
Right.
Could they elect self and family before they have the child? And the answer is yes.
Okay, good.
Now, why would they want to do that? Because this way, coverage becomes effective immediately when that child is born, as
sure.
opposed to enrolling and putting that child in the plan.
Makes sense to me. Now, there are different categories to the plans available in FEHB. And since there are so many, I think it makes sense to give our listeners the general categories to help begin to differentiate them. Before we do that, why don't we sort of start with what do they all have in common? Are there any waiting periods? That type of thing.
Okay. All the plans have the following things in common. First of all, there are no waiting periods per se. That is, if you have a certain condition, okay, there are no mm-hmm. exclusions, no exclusion. But as far as waiting periods concerned, you got to be careful about something. If I have a new employee who enrolls in the Federal Employees Health Insurance and they elect to get into a plan, okay, then coverage does not become effective immediately. They have to pay their first premium, which means that since they're a new employee, they're not going to get their first paycheck for at least 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So coverage actually does not become effective until they paid that first premium,
Ooh.
The first pay period. So if they're coming over, let's say, from private industry, they should make sure that they're old plan will cover them at least until that date, so they have health insurance coverage.
Gotcha.
You know, or they could have, let's say, Cobra, you know, the Cobra plan, but they are not insured immediately. That's not okay. Also, with the federal employee health insurance plans, let's say a federal employee changes plans during the open season. They go from, let's say, for example, Blue Cross Blue Shield to Aetna. I'm just making up some plans here.
Sure.
They decide that Aetna's a better plan, and they do it during this coming open season. The effective date of the new plan will be the first day of the new leave year, which this year is January 5th, 2020.
Ah.
Okay. So if they have any, let's say, any deductibles, things like that mm-hmm. on the old plan, they might as well use them up. Okay. Take advantage of the old plan until the new plan takes effect on the first day of the new leave year. Okay. That is different than dental vision, which we'll talk about later. That works differently.
Another good tip. And by the way, folks, when you hear Ed talk about giving you a form number, he doesn't have any notes in front of him. This is all coming out of his memory. So let's dig into the types because, you know, feds may see certain names and descriptions and may not necessarily know what it is. So as we're breaking it down, we've got fee for service plans, FFS, health maintenance organizations, HMOs, HMOs with point of service products, and consumer-driven health plans, or CDHPS. Just what we need. More acronyms, right, Ed?
Absolutely.
I think it's keeping us young, though. I think that's why we're staying in the game.
Absolutely.
So why don't you start with telling us a little about the fee-for-service FFS plans?
Okay, fee-for-service plans are health insurance plans in which an enrollee can go to any doctor he or she wants.
Okay.
There's no limit as far as what the doctor where they can go. And with many fee-for-service plans, what happens is that the enrollee goes to the doctor. Doctor will say, "Well, here's the charge for the visit," and the employee sometimes has to actually do the billing. They have to send the bill for the visit to the insurance company, or they'll have to pay for the visit up front and then ask for reimbursement from the insurance company.
Ah, okay.
Now, the doctor or hospital may or may not be in a so-called network, a preferred network, mm-hmm. which means the cost of visit may be more than if the doctor or hospital was in a network.
Okay.
The good news is you have freedom to go to any doctor you want. The bad news is you may have to pay more than expected. Also, okay. you may have to put up the money before you're going to get reimbursed. Okay. Typically, this happens many times when a federal employee or annuitant goes overseas.
Ooh.
They get sick. They have, God forbid, have an accident overseas. They go to a hospital overseas, and they go to a doctor, and they have to pay up front, and then they're going to have to bill the insurance company, the Federal Employees Health Insurance Company, to get reimbursed for the cost of the visit.
Gotcha.
Okay.
So a lot of flexibility, but it looks like there might be some paperwork times. There might be some situations where you come out of pocket a little bit more. Now, when a lot of folks hear the acronym HMO, I think sometimes feds think about a Kaiser Permanente type organization that's a big building, lots of docs and labs and facilities all in the same spot. You go there for this, and one's on one floor, one's on another. But there are other types of HMOs, correct?
Yes, you have HMOs with point of service, POS, mm-hmm. they're called.
Mm-hmm.
With the HMOs, generally, just a regular HMO, like Kaiser Permanente,
sure.
like you mentioned, Dan, you're going to plan in which, like Kaiser Permanente, you go to their doctors, mm-hmm. you're assigned what's called a primary physician,
mm-hmm.
who takes care of all your physical needs. And if you have to go to a specialist, then the specialist will be within the HMO, and you just stay within that organization. But if you have to go out of the HMO,
mm-hmm.
and you go to a so-called preferred doctor,
mm-hmm.
that's where the point of service goes on, because the point of service doctor will stay within the guidelines of the HMO in terms of cost. They're
okay.
trying to keep the cost down. It gives you a little more flexibility, not complete, but your overall cost will not be as much as opposed to, let's say, if you had to go to a fee-for-service where the doctors are going to charge you whatever they feel they want to charge, and there is no incentive to have discounts.
Gotcha. So you've got your HMO group to begin with, and in the case of Kaiser, they might actually be employees of the organization, and then you have this network outside that is approved, the in-network benefit. And you're going to have some better coverage there than if you slide out of the out of network. So what do you see as the trade-off between the traditional, I go to the one place that has all the docs in one building, or the HMO and POS together?
The trade-off is that if you go to a pure HMO, you're, as long as you stay local,
mm-hmm.
you're fine.
Okay.
But here's the problem. What happens if you get sick you go out of town. It doesn't have to be overseas. You go out of town. What are you going to do? Now, most HMOs have made provisions for that if you have to go out of town, but you may end up paying more because it's not the HMO preferred rate. Okay. That's where the point of service may be helpful, because the point of service that if you go to a POS that's associated with an HMO, then the rates that the doctor, the hospital charges may be in line with the HMO was charging.
Okay. Now let's talk about the consumer-driven health plans. That's something that really doesn't get a lot of play, but in my little bit of reading, it's actually kind of interesting. So why don't you touch on those?
Well, I'm a little concerned about consumer-driven health plans because here's the whole idea between the consumer-driven health plans. When they came out, let's say in the late 2008, 2010, when health insurance costs were skyrocketing at that time. Still going up, but not as bad as they were back then. The idea came up that consumers should treat health insurance like they treat their everyday commodities. Like if they go out and buy a car, they're going to shop around for the best price.
Okay.
And with health insurance, you should shop around to see what doctors charge and get the best rate, or hospitals, what they charge the rate. Here's the problem. Dan, I don't know too many doctors. If you call them up and say, what do you charge for a typical visit? What are they probably going to say to you?
Goodbye. Click.
Okay, click. Okay. With the consumer-driven health insurance plans, as an incentive to get pay the least amount for healthcare, they're going to give you, the insurance company is going to give you a certain amount of money to work with to pay for doctor visits, for hospital visits. And if you exceed that, you're going to end up paying that out of pocket.
Okay.
The idea being that you should shop around to make sure that you go to the hospitals and doctors that charge the cheapest rates. I got some problems with that because I always say that if a doctor is charging, let's say, $50 for a visit, I don't know if I want to go to that doctor.
Okay.
There's something fishy about $50 for a visit.
Gotcha. I got to ask. I see where there's flexibility there, but a lot of responsibility for the cost management goes to the Fed who chooses it. Don't you kind of get a sense that we're going to see more of these types of plans popping up, though?
We are, but the true test is going to be if people get sicker as a result of saving on their healthcare costs. They don't do a lot of preventive medicine as part of what many good plans have. They're going to end up paying the price.
Interesting.
Paying the price.
And I noticed that GEHA added two plans under the OPM indemnity benefit, which basically was vacant for years. There was nothing in it. And among other things, they're featuring opportunities for patients to interact with their docs digitally as well as through telehealth. We had a fascinating conversation in our office today because I am an antique surrounded by millennials here sometimes. And they were talking about how they're so comfortable video chatting with their doctors and that sort of thing. So it's a little bit of a brave new world for guys like us.
Dan, as we mentioned many times before, I'm worried about one thing. It's called security. How secure is this?
Right.
This is our personal information.
Indeed.
Is everything being taken care of? Make sure that everything is private. No one's sharing with this information.
Sure. Your
doctor. This is your health. Okay.
Yep, couldn't agree with you more.
Okay.
Now, in the article, you covered a tax feature of FEHB known as premium conversion. Why don't you walk us through that and why it can be a good thing?
Okay. With the federal employees' health insurance and also the dental and vision insurance, a federal employee will have his or her premiums, their FEHB premiums, their dental insurance premiums, their vision insurance premiums deducted from their gross salary. Before any taxes are taken out, their insurance premiums will be deducted. For example, suppose somebody's earning $80,000 a year, they're paying $3,000 a year for health insurance, then their taxable salary, that's federal, state, as well as Social Security wages and Medicare wages, will be reduced down to $77,000.
Okay, gotcha.
They're going to pay tax on the $77,000. This way, they're using pre-tax dollars to pay for their health insurance, which means it's a little bit cheaper. In essence, if somebody's in a 40% tax overall tax bracket, they're getting a 40% discount on their insurance premiums.
Sure.
As I say, that applies for federal employees' health insurance, the dental insurance, the FedVIP program, federal employees' dental vision insurance program, as well as the dental and vision insurance, which are through the federal employees' dental vision insurance program. However, there are some employees who may want to opt out of premium conversion.
Okay, tell us why.
And the reason is because these particular employees have excessive out-of-pocket medical expenses. Now, I say excessive, I mean they have so many out-of-pocket medical expenses that they're exceeding 10% of their adjusted gross income.
Okay.
And why is the 10% of adjusted gross income figure important? Because if someone on their federal income taxes itemizes, they file Schedule A, there's a deduction that's still around. It's called the medical expense deduction. In order to deduct out-of-pocket medical, dental, and vision expenses, one would have to exceed in total expenses over 10% of their adjusted gross income.
Okay.
If their adjusted gross income, let's say, is $100,000, they'd have to have out-of-pocket more than $10,000. I hope and pray to dear God this doesn't happen to anybody, but it can. The reason I'm saying this is because if somebody takes advantage of premium conversion, then the premiums that they pay will not be included as part of medical expenses.
Ooh.
Okay. You cannot have your cake and eat it too. Okay. You're getting your upfront tax break.
Gotcha.
Now, if someone knows, let's say in 2020, they're going to have a lot of out-of-pocket expenses.
Gotcha.
Then the option to opt out of premium conversion can be made during the open season for next year. I say this, the premium conversion does apply for federal employees for health insurance, and it does apply for dental and vision insurance. For annuitants, annuitants do not have this option. Also, a federal employee cannot opt out of premium conversion when it comes to their dental and vision insurance. That is required. They cannot say, I want to pay my dental and vision insurance premiums post-tax.
Okay,
that's required. But annuitants always pay their premiums for health, dental, vision insurance, post-tax.
Okay. And I'll just highlight something that Ed just touched on. I'm sure we'll cover it in a future podcast as well. Something to think about when you are in the months and weeks leading up to retirement, you're figuring out that retirement budget. One of the things, your health insurance cost that's deducted from your annuity is not going to be done on a pre-tax basis. So you will feel a little different there. You still want the coverage.
Yes.
Just letting you know, you're going to feel a little different.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Well, Ed, you've done it again. You took a huge topic and gave our feds a good framework of knowledge to help them make the best open season decisions. Brother, I don't know how you do it, but I'm glad you do it with us. Folks, that's a wrap. Be sure to listen to part two, where we will dig into FedVIP, FedVIP, and some of the tax-advantaged healthcare savings options. The FedVIP, again, is the vision and dental, so don't miss that. We are serving those who serve. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on your YouTube channel, and remember to share it with your friends, strangers. Hey, throw in some enemies. Let's get this out there. Ed is truly a national treasure here, and this being out there for feds to listen to at their leisure is really a great, great, great opportunity. Check us out on Twitter and LinkedIn, and don't forget our seminars every month all around the DMV featuring the guru, Ed Zerndorfer. Ed Live, I keep saying it, and nobody has ever come to me and said I was wrong. It's an experience you don't want to miss. So for more information on that, go to stwserve.com and click seminars and events. Be sure to read Ed every month in the Fed Zone. That is also on blog.stwserve.com. Again, that's the Fed Zone. And so for Ed, the crew in Serving Those to Serve, and me, Dan Sipe, good luck, Godspeed, and above all, it's your Fed life. Please, please, please make it a great one because you deserve it. We are out.
Thank you for listening to the Fed Life Podcast. Click the subscribe button below to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Serving Those Who Serve or Raymond James. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investing advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your investment planning. Securities offered through Raymond James Financial Services Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Raymond James Financial Services Advisors Incorporated. Serving those who serve is not a registered broker dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services.
Raymond James is not affiliated and does not endorse the opinions or services of any of the quoted professionals or their respective firms. Any opinions are those of Dan Sipe and not necessarily those of RJFS or Raymond James. This case study is for illustrative purposes only. Individual cases will vary.